I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you are listening to episode number 163 of the Functional Nerds podcast. And John, I just wanted you to know and understand I am not happy to see you. That really is a rocket in my pocket.
That is Patrick Hester, the Hugo winning Ed. Patrick won for the best fanzine with his work over at SF Signal last year. Technically also he does the producing for Merle Lafferty's I Should Be Writing. So Merle Lafferty is the Campbell Award winning author this year. So Patrick has a lot of Hugo Campbell stock going now.
Mm-hmm. And was nominated for podcast too.
And maybe we'll win next year because Squeakcast's out of it. So yep. So there you go. So that is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. And you can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. And you can check out all my music over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. We are joined today by Doug Lane. Douglas Lane is a writer, a blogger, a podcaster, and most recently a novelist for Tor Books. His new novel, Billy Moon, tells the story of Christopher Robin Milne's fictional involvement with the French general strike in May of 1968, and was released from Tor Books by Tor Books on August 27th of 2013. You can check out Doug's website, douglaslane.net, and on Twitter at Doug Lane, D-O-U-G-L-A-I-N. And Doug, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem.
With my website, if you go to douglaslane.com, it redirects to douglaslane.net.
Oh, cool. Okay, so you can put either in either net or com works for you. Very good, very good. That's what I was a little confused when I was looking at your website. I'm like, it says net, but then it says com here, and I don't know, I'm confused. Doug, thanks for joining us today. And, you know, I was telling Patrick before we got on the show today that I'm like, you know, Doug and I have been Twitter friends for a long time. We haven't had a lot of contact, and I think he started out, you know, as an indie author, but now he's got the new book through Tor, because I've seen it really reviewed really well across all the various blogs and stuff that we're sort of a community with. And, you know, so he's doing real well, and I thought he'd be an interesting guy to have on the show. So here you are. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got sort of hooked up with Tor, because I think you did sort of start out independently, if I am correct.
Well, you know, it's funny. I am not really an indie guy, because the way I started in writing was writing for major magazines, mm-hmm. like Amazing Stories or Inner Zone or those kinds of things. And so I'm a short story writer who wrote a novel, is really the truth of it. I had some books come out from small presses, like Nightshade Books was an indie press, not really small. And I had even smaller presses like Eraserhead put out collections of my work. But no, I'm not. I haven't done a lot of self-publishing. I've done one book that I self-published. It was a memoir thing called Pick Your Battle, and about a subject I'm not allowed to discuss, which is barbecue.
But you know, I've wanted.
Is it really about barbecue? Is
no, it's not about barbecue.
Okay. I'm like, wow, that's
politics. But
I've really wanted to write a memoir about my childhood, and I've got the title, My Little League Coach Smoked Pot.
Great one. Does it happen to be true, or is that just a good
no,
title?
No, it's true. It's true.
All right. Cool. That's like the Bad News Bear, only the hippie version.
Well, the whole thing came down to me being a dork and being completely sheltered and not understanding, you know, anything. I'm in his house with his son, and we're doing something baseball for, like, we're building a banner or something, and we needed to cut some paper. And I grabbed what I thought was a pair of scissors from the table, and I'm trying to cut, and it's not cutting. And he looks at me, he goes, "That's a roach clip."
And you're and like, I said, "Why do you need a clip for a roach?"
Yeah, what, and I'm going, "What do you clip from the roaches?"
Exactly.
Oh man, that's really funny, dude. So
that's a great intro to your memoir,
wouldn't it
be? Keep that in your back pocket.
And all five people who would read it would think it would be cool. So,
well, yeah. I'd enjoy it. So you know, Doug, why don't you tell us a little bit about Billy Moon? It's a really interesting premise. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about it before we move on here?
Okay. I'm going to just violate one of the rules here. I've been interested in the strikes of May 1968. In Paris for a long time. I read Greil Marcus's book, Lipstick Traces. I've read Sadie Plant's book, The Most Radical Gesture. In May of 1968, what started out as student protests at Nanterre moved to, which is outside of Paris, Nanterre University is outside of Paris, moved to Paris, to the Sorbonne, and then within 2 weeks, all of France was on strike. And it was a moment in late 20th century history that is inspiring and kind of surprising and strange, that, you know, if you ask what was the reason for the massive strikes and the feeling that they should overturn the Gaullist regime, you don't get a simple answer. It's like because of poetry, man. That's why we should overthrow the government. So it's a great, like, historical period that I'm interested in. And then I thought it would be good if I could put Christopher Robin Milne into that moment in Paris in 68. Now, Christopher Robin Milne was the real man whose father wrote the Winnie the Pooh stories and wrote about Christopher Robin. And he was a man who had to kind of live with being this perpetual fictional boy. Would always want to talk to him about his Pooh Bear, even after, you know, World War II, after his service in Italy. Even, you know, when he had his own child and was, you know, 50 years old, it was still, where are your stuffed animals? So he wanted to, this is a guy who really wanted to be mature, who wanted to find his own way to be a competent adult person. And I wanted to put him in this kind of childish, imaginative moment of revolt in May of 1968. And so that's what the book is about. And then if you throw in the concept of the dream time and some sort of surrealist fantasy elements, then you get the whole thing, and that's the book.
Now, for the record, and in the interest of full disclosure, Tor sent us this book. Yeah. And two things happened. Number one, I went, whoa, Tor sent me a book? Because Tor never sends us books, or at least they've never sent me a book.
They sent me a decent amount of books.
Shut up. I get it. And so I'm like, whoa, Tor sent us a book. Now, the book received post that I do on all the books, it hasn't gone live yet. It's going live here in a couple of days. But we do actually have this book, and it looks I'm sitting there going through the, you know, the marketing spiel on it, and I was like, wow, that's really creative.
Yeah. I was just about to say that. It's like, you know, a lot of times people will say, you know, science fiction and, you know, genre fiction in general, it's like, oh, it's all spaceships and aliens.
Space shit.
And and it's like, you look at this and it's like, wow, that has nothing to do with that. And that is really just a great example of what the genre can be. It can be about anything. It's about speculating. It's about ideas. And it sounds like a really awesome book. And I'm looking forward to checking it out.
So were you obsessed with Pooh Bear growing up?
No, not with Pooh. Well, okay, full confession, maybe a little bit when I was little, but it was not Pooh Bear that made me want to write about Christopher Robin, but it was his memoirs. It was Christopher Robin Milne's memoirs. I think The Enchanted Places was the one, but where he wrote about trying to overcome being a fictional boy. And he wrote very well about it, and you know, wrote about his own relationship with his father and what it was like to have nannies and his feelings about God, and which I won't go into because it's barbecue.
Well, if you think about it, he was a child star before there were children stars.
Yeah, it was really, yeah, it's just absolutely right. I mean, he was right on at the cusp of what I think of as a change in the way we think of childhood. And the change of the way we think of culture. And his father was from kind of a more aristocratic time. He looked back to the nobility and wanted to, and felt some kinship there, although he was a liberal. And Christopher Robin was kind of stuck in between these two worlds, the worlds of modernity that we're in now and what came before, and a child of the 20th century, but the early 20th century. And he kind of defines what being a child is. I mean, mm-hmm. we kind of know what being an imaginative, whimsical child, innocent child is by reading Winnie the Pooh. This is sort of defining what childhood is about for the 20th century.
And for the 21st century, defining what it means to be a child is that show Skins.
Yes, things are changing again.
In 100 years, someone will write about that and put it into like Occupy Wall Street or something.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And I'll go first this week. My pick this week is an album. It is by a guy named Butch Walker. I've been obsessed with Butch Walker the past month or so. I've been listening to all of his solo albums. I first became aware of Butch Walker. He was in a band called The Marvelous Three. They had a hit in 1998 called Freak of the Week. It was played on all of the like rock stations and indie rock stations. And they played on Letterman and all that. And one of those, going to be the next big band, had a hit. First album did pretty well. That was the only single. Second album didn't do so well, and then they pretty much broke up. I saw them live on that first album tour, and still to this day, the best live band I've ever seen. But Butch Walker actually kind of continued on, has done a lot of production, like has produced a lot of big artists, like has produced Pink and Avril Lavigne, and has written songs for them. And so like he has done very well for himself financially in producing artists, but he's always continued putting out his own albums. And I'd kept up with his first solo album or two, but then I sort of lost track and gone on to other things, and I sort of rediscovered him recently, and I've been listening to his last three or four solo albums, and they're great. Very Tom Petty-ish nowadays, a little more poppy, sort of a little poppier Tom Petty, I guess, but with all of his other influences mixed in. So the album I'll recommend is one of his more recent ones. It's the name of his touring band with him, so it's Butch Walker and the Black Widows, and the name of the album is The Spade. But really, you can't go wrong with any of his solo albums. They're all great. So Butch Walker is my pick this week. Doug, why don't you go with your pick this week now?
Oh, you told me to prepare for this, and I've just been so harried that my pick of the week, the only thing I can think of suggesting is this movie that I'm not even sure it's out yet, but it's just about to come out. It's Room 237.
Now, have you seen it yet?
I have not, but I've just seen all the trailers about it, and I can't wait to see this weird movie about The Shining.
I saw that trailer.
Yeah, it's like just about to be available, and I figure I'll watch it, and then I'll know that Stanley Kubrick has been controlling my life or something. I'm not exactly sure.
Did you just see that Stephen King slammed that
Room 237?
No, he slammed The Shining recently.
Oh yeah, well no disrespect, but he's wrong. The Shining is a great movie and much better than his book, but he's a great writer. I mean, he's a good writer, but The Shining is classic.
He liked, I think if I'm not mistaken, he liked the miniseries version of it better than he liked the Stanley Kubrick film.
Well, no, he made the miniseries. Didn't he direct the miniseries?
I don't think he directed it, but they gave him more input than Kubrick did.
Well, look, I mean, probably the thing there is Kubrick had his vision, mm-hmm. and King had his vision, and Kubrick's vision was just weirder and whatever. So, I think that's a great movie. What do you guys think? Do you think The Shining is a great movie?
Here's Daddy.
I know, Johnny.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I like the Simpsons version better.
Oh, okay.
Totally.
I'm Marley Safer. I'm this tonight on 60 Minutes.
Oh, God, I love that. Anyway, cool. So it's called Room 237. Now, is it a doc, or is it like just a regular feature film that's just sort of about the story about it?
It's a documentary film explaining all the hidden, secret, weird meanings of the movie The Shining. And down to like the architecture of the hotel and the way the scenes were edited together, and I don't know what all. But
now, have you seen the recut trailer for The Shining?
No.
There is a someone did this on YouTube. They took and they cut their own trailer for The Shining.
Make it into like a romantic comedy?
Makes it into a romantic comedy, yes. Yeah. It is hilarious.
Okay.
Yeah,
I have seen that. And that is good.
Cool. All right, cool. Well, room 237, I'll be on the lookout. We were just talking in a recent episode about documentaries, so I will have to put that one in the queue once it is available. So very good, room 237. Patrick, what's your pick this week?
My pick this week is this little game that I've got. So Angry Birds Star Wars 2, and it's absolutely consuming all of my life. Including my podcasting time, as you can see. Oh, I get to be Darth Maul. He's got the little spinny dual saber things. Oh, it's just so cool. But yeah, that's my pick this week. Star Wars Angry Birds 2.
I've read a lot of reviews of that this week, and just basically saying how Rovio is the company that makes all those Angry Birds games. And they were just talking about how any other or a lot of other game makers would just, you know, sort of skin Angry Birds with Star Wars characters, and they just don't do that. They actually change the gameplay. They add all these different things. They make it a completely different experience that's not – it's sort of based on the original game, but they kind of keep going. And they're just basically like really – all the reviews I read were just like really praising them for just – trying to make great games and not
It's 99 cents. The first one is the first trilogy of movies,
right?
This one is the second trilogy of movies, and they add in the dark side. So you start off and you are Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Yoda, and then you also play Darth Sidious, Darth Maul, Count Dooku. And you get some battle droids that you can play. You can add characters as you earn points. You know, by getting stars, you can add other characters. I'm sure Amidala is going to come in this eventually. They do add Anakin and Jar Jar. And Jar Jar is interesting because basically you fling him and then you shoot his tongue out at things, grab them, and swing him around to crash into stuff.
Cool.
Anakin is being pulled by a pod racer, and what you do is he'll shoot forward, and then you kind of put your finger somewhere, and he'll swing around, and his pod racer will shoot off and blow stuff up. I mean, it's a lot of fun and completely addictive, and I'm never gonna ever be able to write anything ever again because all I do is play Angry Birds Star Wars.
Ah, all right. Well, there you go. So check that out, Angry Birds 2, Star Wars 2.
Yep.
Very good. All right. Well, let's get on to our main topic this week, and that is book tours. Doug is just coming off a book tour himself, or is in the middle of it. And I just thought that would be kind of an interesting thing to talk about, because I think book tours at one point were pretty common, and many authors would do book tours. And I think at one point, then they sort of cool down a bit, and you know,
now they do blog tours.
You do see some authors, especially in the genre fiction community, going on book tours, and so I'd like to hear of Doug's experiences with his book tour, and you know, how that went. Was it backed by the publisher? Was it more of an indie thing?
It was small. And so I actually got help from people who listen to my podcast and have read my short fiction, like me and all. I ran a Kickstarter campaign to fund my tour.
Oh, and that's a great idea.
And it, you know, got fully funded. It wasn't a lot of money I was asking for, but that worked out so I could afford to go and take time off work to do it. And the main thing that was maybe different about my book tour than most, other than it being funded by Kickstarter, is that I went by train the whole way.
Oh, you're Sheldon. You're Sheldon.
Yeah. Yes. And I cannot emphasize enough that if you want to experience the full breadth of America, and you want to remain sane, just fly. Don't go by train. But If you like back pain and endless conversations into the night with people you just met, then
and then the constant ticking of the car.
I've been home for one day, and last night, like one full day in a night, and last night I woke up and I had to go to the rest, you know, go to the bathroom, and I got up, I was half awake, and I was like, wow, the train's bigger. This is so comfortable. So that would be the first thing that I would point out, is that going by train from coast to coast and back again, it is a real commitment, and it's not for the if you have a medical condition or a psychological condition like I do, it may not be the best thing for you.
I want to go on a Zeppelin tour.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah, and I don't mean the airship.
Oh, just go on tour with Led Zeppelin? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now, so you said you went coast to coast. What were some of the cities that you hit along?
Well, I only went to really three cities. I mean, I started in Portland, did an event here. Then I went to San Francisco, and then I took the train. This is a big one. This is the part that hurt. Took the train from San Francisco to Chicago. That took some time. Oh. And then I did an event in Chicago with Mary Ann Mohan Raj and a guy named Charlie Earp. And then from there to New York, where I did an event again, and then came home. So it was just three stops. It wasn't a big deal, but it was a lot of time. And
now, did you take a train from New York back to Portland, or did you fly?
Yeah. And the thing is, I never stopped meeting people. I mean, along the really great thing about doing a book tour was, and I do a podcast like you, so I have listeners that wanted to meet me, and I got to meet them. You know, I stayed at a few of their, homes in San Francisco and Chicago. I stayed with Kevin Dole and Brad Potts, and they were very nice to have me. And we, you know, drank beer and talked philosophy and talked podcasts and science fiction, all of that, well into the night. And it was really a lot of fun. And then I even had a couple of my listeners meet me in Chicago and take the train with me to New York.
Wow.
So yeah, so I had and then in New York was wild. New York, I had so many people, cool people are there, and I met up with so many people who listen to my podcast and read my work and or who I know and who I admire. So it was, that was really intense. And then now I'm back home.
Well, in regular, what's funny is in Chicago and New York, you're actually required to take the train to get anywhere.
That's true. I did. I mean, I took subway cars all around, but I didn't fall asleep sitting up as often on the subway.
Yeah, now, I don't think you want to do that.
When you were in New York, did some tour representation come out? Because tour is obviously based in New York, so I didn't have anything to do with the event there.
I did. I met my new editor, Liz Gorinsky.
Sure.
And she's very nice, and she bought me a very expensive meal. That was awesome. And just because we just went to a restaurant, you know, not a big fancy one, but in New York, everything is super expensive. And then I met my publicist, Emily Mullen, and she was there at the actual reading and took pictures and was real supportive. And hopefully we'll get some more coverage of that event.
I think the only person at tour I've ever met is Irene Gallo.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Irene's cool. And I've met Liz a couple times before, too. I met her at World Fantasy when we were
there. Remember meeting her in person. I think we're Twitter nice, friends. Yeah. Yeah.
She told me she's a Kelly Link fan. You guys like Kelly Link, the author?
No, I don't know too much about Kelly Link. So.
I don't know that one either.
Well, I'm plugging Kelly Link. My pick of the week is Kelly Link.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you did the tour as a Kickstarter, which I particularly find to be kind of an interesting idea, because I'm a musician and I do some gigs, and not as much as I used to do, but there's this, I'll call it a misconception, although I'm sure it's different for everybody, where the prevailing idea with music, at least, is that, well, you can't make any money selling your music online, or not very much. You'll make a few bucks from downloads and selling a few copies of your albums, maybe a few CDs and that. But which is true. That's not the entry part. But oh, the money's in touring. Yeah, go on tour. But it's like, but if you're an independent artist and you have a kind of a not a huge following yet, the cost of traveling and everything else, touring is not as lucrative as I think a lot of people would maybe have you believe, like, yes, if you're a big act and you could sell out big places, yeah, you're going to make a lot of money. But that is not the reality for most musicians, I would say. Yeah. So I think the idea of funding, doing a Kickstarter to support the tour is really interesting. And I have seen some musicians do that in the past to sort of have it as their own tour support. So that's a really, now you were saying that you went on a train ride with a couple of the podcast listeners. Now, was that part of the rewards for the Kickstarter? Was that, you know,
that was not an official reward. No. Okay. One of the people who, went on the train ride with me, it was the biggest donor to the, mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was sort of a reward, but, he's also a guy who I do a weekly talk shoe workshop with. We talk about philosophy every week or every couple weeks, really. And his name's Andy Marshall. So he's really like my biggest podcast fan. He's like he's listened to every single episode. He's got them all stored away on his computer. I don't even have them all, you know? So it was great to meet him and to talk to him. And realize that he is odd because, you know, he listens to The Phantom Mind. Of course he's odd. One of the things I love about Andy is that he listens to my podcast or every podcast he listens to at double speed.
Oh, yeah. I know people who do that. Bernardo does that.
Yeah. It's like because he doesn't have time to wait for me mm-hmm. to get to my point. So he puts it on double speed and it gets all the information in his head as fast as he can. And
I actually listen to podcasts at 1.5 speed. I started doing that about 6 months ago, and I did because there was just like a lot of podcasts I wanted to listen to, and I wasn't getting to all of them, and I ended up dropping a bunch of podcasts that I liked. But you know, maybe with my commute and everything else, maybe I listen to about an hour and a half of podcasts in a day. And I just I didn't want them to pile up. So I tried 1.5 and I find it comfortable. 2 times is too fast. Like I find that distracting, but 1.5.
Maybe he doesn't do it double time really. Maybe he's like you and he does it 1.5. I can't remember, but I just know it was definitely much more speed. It was speeded up and I think you lose the nuance of the conversation. Mm-hmm. But you certainly get all the information. And
well, the only time I even notice it is if they play music, if they play songs I know, because then all of a sudden it's like, oh, whoa, that's fast. Like, I don't even notice it. 1.5 is actually, I guess I've just gotten used to it now.
Yeah.
But really the only time I notice is with the music, then it's distracting. And I'll listen to audiobooks sometimes. I don't listen to audiobooks at 1.5. The Audible app that I use, you can actually listen to it at 1.25 speed. And mm-hmm. I find that to be a nice, comfortable listening scene. 1.5 for audiobooks is a little too much because I really want to pay attention to the books. Podcasts I sort of have on a little bit more, I don't want to say background noise, but like if I miss a word here or there, it's no big deal. But if you're listening to a book and you miss a section, you're like, wait, what's going on now? Like I'm totally lost.
I have a question about this reward. So his reward was to be on the train ride with you.
No, that was not his reward.
Oh,
that was just something he did. Oh, and okay. It was kind of a reward. I mean, he asked, he said, I'd like to go. Would you, you know, we worked it out. And I'm not going to like tell him no, basically. He's a big donor. I'm sure.
Well, I was curious about hour 163. Did he still think it was a great thing?
No, he was pretty much tired of it all. and he got on. I mean, he told me that before he even got on the train, he was thinking he had made a big mistake to commit to go to New yeah. York. But he, you know, we had fun though. And it was, you know, we were all tired by the time we got to New York, but that's not even the heart. I mean, Chicago to New York is nothing, man. It's San Francisco to Chicago. That's the killer.
It's a lot. Yeah. More. I mean, in the time it takes you to get from San Francisco to Chicago on a train, you could have flown, you know, back and forth 150 times.
Yeah. Yes. And I might've,
yeah.
But okay, so the other thing I wanted to talk about when it came to my tour, which was weird, and I don't know if you guys have you experienced this, but I know a lot of people online. Like, it turns out when I really examined my life, I have a lot of friends
yeah.
who I've never met.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now I went to New York. Primarily, it was New York, although you know, in Chicago and San Francisco too. But really, in New York, I've gone there and met these people in the flesh. And it was weird to meet them. Because they sounded just like sometimes they're podcasters or people I've heard their voice a lot. They sounded like themselves. They kind of look like themselves, but they just weren't quite right. It's like,
there's an awkward moment.
Yeah.
Because you know this person online, and now you're meeting them in person, and all the internet anonymity is gone.
Yeah. They're like these real physical people.
Yeah.
That with all, you know, full of boogers and stuff like that.
One of the things that I try to do, because I just came back from Worldcon and in San Antonio, and John DiNardo and I did an SF Signal meetup. And this is the second year in a row we've done this at Worldcon, where we basically put something up on Facebook and say, hey, if you're a fan of SF Signal, or if you're an author, editor, whatever, you know, please come hang out, say hello to everybody. And it's a nice little event. And we always get people who obviously are fans of the blog or the podcast, and they come up and start talking. And I always have that moment of awkwardness, and then I just try to get past it and have a conversation with that person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because now they've made the effort to come and see us in person. And so, right. You know, I want to reward that effort and include them in everything and introduce them to people, you know. And a lot of times, you know, you'll have someone who is just a fan. They're not necessarily in the genre community at all. They're just a fan, and they've shown up, and, you know, they're standing there talking to you, and their eyes keep flitting over to the fact that Adam Christopher is sitting there.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap, that's Adam Christopher. It's like, yeah, you want to meet him?
Why am I talking to you? You're a loser. There's real
yeah. Do you want to meet him? I'll introduce you.
I love that experience. The times, the various cons that I've been to over the years. Like, I guess it's a little weird, but I guess I'm just very social in that regard. Like, I really like meeting everybody in person, and I really I enjoyed. And I don't know if you had this experience, Doug, by doing this, is that it strengthens, in my experience with it, was that it strengthens your relationship with people significantly once you meet them in person.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden your online interaction is much deeper, because now, yes, we are friends online, but now that you've sort of met in person and had some real conversations, because I think online everyone's a little guarded and maybe doesn't talk about everything that they would talk about if they met you in person. Maybe they would share it, because I know I always share information that I maybe wouldn't share online. And then all of a sudden, now you know each other as human beings a lot more. And it just makes everything much stronger and deeper. And it's I love the experience of meeting folks that I know online in the flesh.
No pressure here, but do you find having talked to someone for your podcast or doing a hangout is a middle ground step towards that kind of connection that real life connect, you know,
sure,
Being them in the flesh is?
Yeah, definitely. Because we do all these batch recordings where we do, you know, three or four episodes every Saturday, you know, like on a Saturday now. We used to do it every week at night. And I used to get always so stressed because there were people that we maybe knew a little bit online, but then I would always be like, oh, well, what if they think we're jerks, or what if we think they're a jerk? And, you know, it would always have this feeling of stress, like, oh my God, I don't know what's going on. And it was always fine. I don't think we ever had anybody on that really didn't work out or I didn't end up liking by the end of it, or not hating at least, you know? So, no, but it absolutely is, because, you know, one of the, and you've been doing a podcast for a long time, Doug, you know, one of the things that I find as a podcast listener and as a podcaster is that it's a much deeper medium, in that, you know, you can have a blog and you can have 100,000 readers of your blog, or, and you can have a podcast and you can have 1,000 listeners, and those 1,000 listeners are much more invested than 100,000 blog readers typically, because you're literally in that person's ear. It's a much more intimate experience as a listener and as a content creator in that way. So,
well, see, and yeah. I always have to do the self-effacing humor. So when someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, listen to your podcast and I love it," I go, "Oh, you're the one." Then they immediately smile, and then I know it's okay.
Cool, cool. All right. Well, unfortunately, we are running a little short on time. So so once again, Doug has his new book, Billy Moon, out. It is out through Tor right now. And where are some of the places where people can pick up the book, Doug?
Well, they can pick it up pretty much anywhere. I mean, it's at Walmart, apparently. It's at I mean, if you at least online. I mean, I don't know if it's actually in any of those stores, but Amazon, you know, Barnes & Noble, Powell's has it. I really recommend people, if they, you know, if they don't feel like spending $25 on a hardback from some guy they just heard once on a podcast, go ahead and go to the library. Put it on hold. Check it out. I mean, there's the more people do that, the more copies will sell the library, so it'll be great for me, and I like libraries. So I recommend check it out at your local library.
Very good. You know, now, Doug, we've had a million authors on. I don't think anybody's ever said that. I don't recall anybody ever saying that going to – I don't think any author's anti-library, but I think you're the first to say, yeah, go to the library. Check it out for free. And I think that's a great thing to tell people. Thanks.
Now, Doug, do the libraries in your area, do they carry books instead of DVDs?
They do. I think there's like 10 books, and they rotate them out. We still have actual physical books.
Yeah. I was actually bummed because I get a lot of books, and I was going through the like 2011 set of books that I'd received, and I was going to take them down to the library and donate them, and they told me that they'll just sell them.
Oh, man.
They won't actually put them in stock, and I was super bummed about that. It was like a catch-22. It's like, yeah, they'll get money and it'll help keep the library going, but boy, I sure wish they would have just put the books in stock.
I tell you, somebody somewhere should really do some sort of serious examination of what the library's future is going to be, because they got the ebooks. You know, you can borrow ebooks from the library, but I think the libraries still have to preserve the physical book. But I'm not exactly sure how to market that or what to do exactly how to do that. But I think it's real important for libraries just to continue to exist to preserve these physical objects we call books.
Well, Doug, you need to come back on the show another time, and we can have a whole big conversation about libraries.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Cool. Very good. Very good. All right. So that is so Billy Moon is the book. Go and check it out of your library or buy it. You know, you can buy it still too. Doug's website is douglaslane.com, and his Twitter is at Doug Lane, LAIN. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Same old. Go over to atfmb.com. I've got a free chapter up there for people to read, the latest novel, The Space Opera. Go to Kirkus and check out my reviews of graphic novels. And please come and say hello to me at Mile High Con, October 18th, 19th, and 20th here in Denver in the Tech Center.
Very good for me this week. Just you can go check out my music, my songs, and my instrumental compositions over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us this week, and we will see you next time. Doug, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
All righty.
I can while away the hours conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. In my head I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching. If I only had a brain, I'd unravel what it means to miss New Orleans and miss her each night and day. I know I'm not wrong, because the feeling's getting stronger the longer I stay away. Mr. Moss-covered pines, tall sugar pines, where mockingbirds used to sing. I'd love to see that old lazy Mississippi hurrying in the spring. Moonlight on the bayous, Creole tunes fill the air. I dream about magnolias in June, and I'm wishing I was there. Do you know what it means?
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.